You are listening to Pastor Talk.
When I think about revitalization in settings where I have been and where I've consulted and tried to lend a little bit of help along the way to other guys, it is the scenario in which a church has recognized, so there has to be recognition. They've recognized the place to which they have fallen in their effectiveness of ministry in their local community and in the global enterprise of mission work. And there is a willingness to acknowledge the faltering nature of the ministry, and there is a willingness to explore a path forward.
Welcome to Pastor Talk, the podcast of Lifeway Pastors, giving you the tools and encouragement you need to shepherd your flock well. I'm your host, Marty Duran.
My guest today on Pastor Talk is Philip Nation. Philip is the pastor of First Baptist Church of Bradenton, Florida. Philip earned an MDiv from Beeson Divinity School and a DMin from Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary, and for 2 years was the national spokesperson for the Back to Church Sunday campaign from Outreach. He's the author of Habits for Our Holiness from Moody, subtitled How the Spiritual Disciplines Grow Us Up, Draw Us Together, and Send Us Out. He's co-authored two other books, Compelled and Transformational Discipleship. He was the general editor of the Mission of God Study Bible. He also serves as the assistant professor of leadership and biblical studies at Houston Baptist University. Philip and Angie live in Florida. They have two college-age sons, Andrew and Chris. I am really happy to welcome today to Pastor Talk, Philip Nation. Philip is a longtime friend, I guess more than a decade now. And we have served together in a church staff setting. We have worked together here at Lifeway and been friends really outside of work and ministry. So if he gets like mean and belligerent and stuff today, don't worry. The feeling is mutual. Philip, welcome to Pastor Talk.
Thanks, Marty. I plan to become at least belligerent, but maybe not all that mean. But it has been fun. You and I was thinking about how long we've known each other, and I think that it's maybe stretched past even 15 years now, back in our years back in the Atlanta, Georgia metro area.
Wow, was that as far back as 2000? And wow,
yeah, 15 it's been years. A long time.
That has been a long time. You're getting old, man.
Well, one of us is. And I feel like I'm getting old because I recently became an empty nester, and so I know.
God bless the empty nest.
Oh, yes, that's what every dad says, and but not necessarily what every mother says. So.
Well, hey, tell our listeners a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, so I have been in ministry since my teenage years. I preached my first sermon when I was 17, and that's what I've done all my life is ministry work, one way or another, most of it always on a church staff. Angie, my wife and I, we got married 23 years ago, and we've got two sons. They're both in college, thus the empty nest. Andrew is a senior at Middle Tennessee State University, where he's studying communications and wants to be in radio or television type of work. And then our younger son, Chris, is a sophomore at Houston Baptist University, and he is actually studying to go into ministry as well, something which we rejoiced about when he told us, and then I went and actively prayed against. And God, please save him. No, I'm kidding. But actually, just about 3 weeks ago, here toward the end of the summer of 17, Chris preached his first sermon here at our church where I'm pastoring, and I'm in Southwest Florida at First Baptist Church of Bradenton, which is a coastal community on the Gulf Coast side of Florida, about 45 minutes south of Tampa.
I'm sure if you find the website online that you can hear Chris's sermon.
Yeah, actually you can. And for a 19-year-old, and I am biased, I thought he was brilliant and wonderful in every way possible.
Well, he probably was. I mean, I'm not even kidding when I say that he probably was. Andrew's been on radio a little bit. Philip has a voice for radio, and they both inherited that from Philip's dad, Phil, who has an unbelievably resonant voice.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. The genetic pool there is deep, and Andrew will be a smashing success in this field. There's no doubt about it. We've told him that we're all relying on him to support us in our old age.
That's right. That's right. Adopt me into your family. So we're going to be talking about church revitalization today, and you have been involved in personally in two churches, and then I know you've done some probably some unofficial and official consulting with some churches and pastors who are working through this. So, you know, a lot of pastors hit that point where their churches plateau, and they're giving it all they've got. They're praying as hard as they ever have, and they're studying as good as they ever have, and preaching, they think, and probably in reality as good as they ever have, and, you know, haven't departed from the faith or anything like that. But, you know, what might have been a good, strong situation for a while starts to weaken a little bit. So the pastoral hurricane goes down into a tropical depression, and sometimes we look for answers. You know, is there something that we can do? Is there, or, you know, are there things that organizationally, or, you know, any of those structural things that we think about? You know, we all pray for revival, and we all know that we don't bring it. But when we think about revitalization, there's more involved than just praying for revival. So talk a little bit about what we mean when we're talking about, or what is the generally accepted term and how people understand it that work in this area.
Yeah, it's a great question to set up everybody's kind of expectations, because revitalization, you can paint too broad of a picture to say, well, every church needs to be revitalized. And on some incredibly generic level, you could say that every church is going to need to be revitalized, if not now, at some point in the future when it begins to wane a bit. Because, you know, the churches that Paul planted in Ephesus, Galatia, Corinth, I mean, they're not around anymore. In that kind of sense. And so there was a point where even those churches needed revitalization.
Well, there goes my cruise.
I know. I'm sorry. Your pastor cruise around Turkey is just shot. Sorry. But you know what? I'm sure you can still drum that up.
I know I can. If people will believe that Joel Osteen drove a yacht through the Houston floodwaters, I can probably get a big group to go the tour the remains of the Ephesian church.
People will love that. Well, you know, especially if you can find that Laodicean church. That's where the stuff is right there. You talk about a church needing revitalization. When I think about revitalization in settings where I have been and where I've consulted and tried to lend a little bit of help along the way to other guys, it is the scenario in which a church has recognized, so there has to be recognition. Mm-hmm. They've recognized the place to which they have fallen in their effectiveness of ministry in their local community and in the global enterprise of mission work. Mm-hmm. And there is a willingness to acknowledge the faltering nature of the ministry, and there is a willingness to explore a path forward. I think that in some ways there are churches that simply don't want to be revitalized. There are those churches. I hope that they are the minority, that they're satisfied to be a bubble or a subculture away from the rest of the world, where they can just throw rocks at the culture from a distance. Mm-hmm. Those churches are really not willing to be revitalized. And I think that revitalization is not necessarily just, it's not a small church issue. That is a misconception, that the only churches that need to be revitalized are small and, you know, and they're 4 months away from bankruptcy, closing the doors, and giving the building over to somebody else.
To a church planner,
Yeah, or, I mean, I just returned from Denver, Colorado, where I was out visiting with church planters, and the number of older church buildings that are now being used as pubs, bookstores, and all the like is not just, that's not a European thing that is just happening across the ocean. That's happening here in America. And so revitalization, it can be a large church issue where people suddenly have the recognition we've been plateaued here for an extended period of time. Mm-hmm. And so we need to reset some things internally about both our attitudes and our activities in order to line up with all of the petitions and prayers that we're making to God that He would do something. And so we need to align our lives and our church systems with, you know, the cries that we're making to God that He would then work through us in order for us to be revitalized and for there to be a chance of awakening in the community around us.
Not to go full on 12 step, but is the first thing really, isn't the first thing the hardest, which is to admit that your church needs to be revitalized?
Absolutely. And I would say that of the churches that I have been a pastor in that needed revitalization, and so I think that I can honestly say that there are three churches that were in that position that needed revitalization. Two of them were very willing to make the admission. The one that I serve right now, First Bradenton, they're willing to make the admission that things have to change. But in one of the churches that I served, they were very unwilling to make that admission. They thought, oh, well, we're fine. We just need a new, younger pastor so that we can have some additional growth. Mm-hmm. But all in all, we're doing just okay without the recognition of, no, this is a pretty broken place that has both sin issues and systemically ineffective ministry issues that need to be overhauled, and lives need to be overhauled. And so it is, there has to be that admission of something has gone awry. And without that admission, then change just simply can't happen.
So pastor looks around, realizes his church, he's honest with himself, maybe he's honest with the deacons or leadership team or whoever. The community is either growing and they're not growing, or it's changing and they're not reflecting the demographics. Justin, you have any idea where that's coming from? Philip, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm okay. Still here.
Did you hear all that?
I did. I heard some static.
Okay. I'll start again with the question. Maybe we can edit that out. So you have a pastor who decides to be honest with himself, or has a prayer time and the Lord speaks to him and opens his eyes that things are not going well. You know, he can look at the weekly attendance and realize that it's either flat or trending down. He can look around and see the subdivisions are going up and people are moving in, but the church is not growing, or the area around is changing demographically and the church doesn't reflect that. And so he maybe shares it with the deacons, or he shares it with, you know, the pastoral team or whoever. And they think we've got to do something, and they've been praying and they really want to start addressing things. For the guy who's there, who's listening, who says, man, I just don't know what to do next. I've got this burning passion. I've got this strong desire to see God move, and it's not happening. We're not being effective, and we're realizing it. But for crying out loud, what do we do first? We change the preaching, we put in a fog machine. I mean, what do we do?
Well, obviously more lasers is always better.
That's right. LASIK church.
LASIK church. There you go. You should probably go ahead and copyright that because somebody's going to see it. I think that for the first steps are completely in the honest position that the pastor is willing to take, but that does not mean that he needs to take a dour or depressed position, mm-hmm. which, again, is a temptation that some guys can fall into, is that they take a depressed position. And so be honest with yourself as a pastor and ask yourself, is there anything that I'm doing as the primary spiritual leader of the church that is actually adding to this plateau or to this need of revitalization? So I mean, start with yourself and be willing to have some honest, kind of ruthless self-evaluations, and then begin to be honest with the lay leadership structure of your church, whatever that is. And I would say that doesn't mean that you just suddenly call together all the deacons and all the committees and all the church council, and you have some mass and you just emotionally and verbally vomit all on top of them about the need for revitalization. But this is an issue that you're going to have to shepherd people through. They slowly got to this point, and they do not think about these issues on a daily basis like you as the pastor think about it on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. At best, they're going to think about it on a monthly basis. Some people are going to think about it based on what was the giving this month. Other people are going to think about it based on what was the attendance of the first Sunday of the month, or the Sunday of the month that was not a holiday or didn't have some, you know, community event that was going to pull people away from. And so they might think about it 12, maybe 18, maybe 24 times a year, and you're thinking about it every single day.
Right.
And so how do you find the leaders in your church that you can bring them into a more high-level leadership insight conversation about the nature of the church? Because as I've learned, and this was a lesson I learned from the business world, is that everybody in a company, and I think this is true in church, everybody has been told a story, and they have been assigned a part in that story. And for the most part, in church, people are playing the part of the story the very best they know how to.
Mm-hmm.
And so now, you as the leader have the opportunity to tell them a better story and to help them to see a better part to play in a new story, rather than continuing to spin their wheels in a story that's broken, that doesn't work any longer. And that actually, you become a dealer in hope at that point to them, because you've given them a more golden future that is not far away, but is actually nearby, that they can walk into a new story. And so I do think admission, and then being honest, and then rolling out that kind of honest language into the public forum, but being smart about it so that you don't just stand up and just emotionally blurt on a Sunday morning when nobody was expecting it, but that you help walk the people forward. That's being a good leader. That's being a good shepherd to people's souls.
What's the challenging part? I mean, for me, the challenging part is what you addressed, that I've spent so much time marinating in everything that I don't realize when, you know, that the one vision casting sermon doesn't clamber on top of the, you know, clamber onto the boat and say full speed ahead. You know, they're still back on the shore getting their life jackets adjusted and wondering where the boat's going. And so what are some processes or some, like, maybe some practical steps to get from this is the passion of my heart and I'm going to die if I don't at least try to do this to, you know, all aboard, now we're going somewhere?
Yeah. Well, I recently heard somebody say that in talking about culture, and I think the first thing is that you have to internally decide that you're going to help reset the culture, the ethos, and the pathos of the church.
Mm.
And culture, I recently heard somebody define culture as the positive things that you celebrate and the negative things that you tolerate.
Mm.
And so you have to decide where you're going to tip the culture toward. Is it going to be on the negative things that we just tolerate, or is it going to be on the positive things that we celebrate? And so it is the decision in your own heart, mind, soul, leadership capacity. What is it that we're going to celebrate? And in terms of helping a church to revitalize, I think that that becomes a greater tool in your toolbox than most people recognize, is what is it that you're going to regularly celebrate? Now, for example, here's a very practical example from here at our congregation. Our monthly newsletter that we send out digitally and that we print up for distribution on Sundays, that is in the lobby. All of the announcements in that newsletter, when I arrived here, everything was listed chronologically. And so it was, you know, what's on the first day of the month, what's on the third day of the month, everything was listed chronologically, rather than things are at the top of the page in the left-hand column that are priority, that are the most important ministries of the church. And so what happens is somebody could pick up a newsletter, and the very first thing they read it's a good thing, but it's not the most important thing that we're doing, but it has the celebratory, you know, kind of land space on the bulletin. And the same happens in worship services, is that you feel like you're just ramrodding seven or eight announcements a Sunday, and you can't give space and emphasis to the things that are most important that are going to reset the life of the church. And so making the decision, what is it that we want to that we want people to really clamor for? What is it that we want to that when they come to church, this is what they know they're going to get as mission and ministry and to themselves and to others, and start celebrating those things. And so you reset what you celebrate, and then along with that, you have to reset your language. And so you might need to move in order to revitalize a church. What I find is that most churches that are wallowing kind of down in a ditch, they have very generic language about what it is they're trying to accomplish. And so begin to use very specific language and reset language about what is most important. And so if you have a church and they have a really generic statement all the time that, you know, what they want to do is they want to share Jesus, or they want to, you know, they want to love, we want to love the city. Well, what does that even mean? I mean, nobody knows how to define that.
It means we don't want potholes on the main road.
That's exactly right. And so start defining for the people in the congregation what it is that you're going to actually shoot for and aim for to accomplish, so that they know this is what we celebrate and this is what we're aiming for, rather than just kind of this big generic statement of, well, we want to share Jesus. Well, Mormons want to share Jesus. I mean, that is, you know, there are a lot of people who want to share Jesus. Jesus is a nice guy. And so instead, we need to work with a lot more specificity about what it is that our church is going to do. So celebrate the right things, reset your language. And then I tell people, and we've done it here, we've started very slowly with staff, and that is reset the metrics. I'm not ever going to walk away from the metric of baptism and conversions and people joining and people attending the church. All of those numeric metrics are important. I want more people getting saved, more people getting baptized, more people worshiping Jesus, more people attending Bible study. But there's a lot of other metrics that we need to utilize as well. And that is, how are our leaders doing? Are they healthy? Do they feel fulfilled? Are they equipped for the ministry that we're asking them to stand in the middle of, whether that's leading a third grade boys Bible study group, or whether that's, you know, ministering to the, you know, the deacons ministering to shut-ins. And so there's lots of other metrics. And so, you know, set up a realistic set of metrics that you want your church to operate by, so that every year you can revisit it and say, okay, so how are we doing? Not just on how many bodies showed up and how much money came in,
right?
But are people maturing in their faith, and are more people serving in the ministries of the church in a way that it is both fulfilling to their own personal walk with Christ and fruitful for the kingdom of God?
You've been listening to Pastor Talk with Philip Nation, first pastor of First Baptist Church of Bradenton, Florida. That is correct, right?
That is.
Because there's a Brandon down there.
There is, not far from us.
And then Sam Rainer pastors at West Bradenton, is that right?
That's right. Sam and I are about 2 miles from each other.
Okay. Do y'all run past each other going to Starbucks in the morning?
No, we do not. And Sam runs a lot faster than me because he's young.
Yeah, but you have a bicycle and a kayak.
That's true. That's true. I can outdo him on my bicycle if he stays on foot.
That's right. Philip, thanks for being here with us today. And you're on Twitter, I think it's just at Philip Nation, 1L, I think.
That's right. 1L, 1 Nation.
1L, 1 Nation. And then philipnation.net is your blog, is that correct?
It is. I post there semi-regularly about faith, leadership, and other silly things as well.
Excellent. So if you do have a question about revitalization or something that came up on the podcast today, feel free to contact Philip through one of those venues, and he'll be happy to respond. Again, this has been Pastor Talk with Philip Nation, talking about church revitalization. And my brother and friend, I really appreciate you being with us today.
Thanks a lot, Marty. It's been great.
Pastor Talk is the podcast of Lifeway Pastors and is hosted by Marty Duren. That's me. Join us each week as I interview pastors, authors, professors, and others to help your ministry as you seek to shepherd your flock well. Until next time, this is Marty Duren.